Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts, and also Hockey Night in Canada. Friedge, I want to start by talking about Evander Kane, but I do want to get to the Bobby Clarke comments and what this perhaps may wink at as it relates to the Philadelphia Flyers' immediate and long-term future. But what is the latest you can tell us about Evander Kane? It seemed as if there was a momentum building last night that was going to culminate with a Edmonton Oilers tweet that Evander Kane has now joined oil country. What is the very latest?
I think that was just premature, Jeff. I do think the Oilers are in it. I do think it's possible he ends up there, but I just think that was too much too soon. I don't believe he's finished yet meeting with teams virtually. I think that's still going on as we speak. I think there's some teams there that still wanted to talk to him. You know, just ask him a few questions, have him ask them questions, and we'll see kind of where we are. So I don't even think the process of meeting with teams, I don't even think the process of meeting with teams is over yet. I still think it could be Edmonton, but I think that's premature still.
Joe Smith mentioned that Tampa was interested, but they pulled out. You had put in your notes the 32 thoughts that the Florida Panthers perhaps could be a suitor as well. You know, going back to the weekend, someone told me that, you know, don't be surprised if there are 10 teams that have serious interest in Evander Kane. Is that too high, or is it right on the mark? Is it too low?
Judging from what I can tell, it's a little bit. Like, I think there were a lot of teams that called. I think almost everybody called. Like, I talked to one GM who said, I'm really not interested, but I thought it was my duty to call and just see what was going on here. And the other thing he wanted to know was, he said, is there any chance that a team that we're really battling with is gonna get him? He kind of wanted to know that. So, I think that there were a ton of teams that called. I mean, legitimate interest to the point where I think he potentially talks about joining them. I don't think it's 10, but I think some of that is teams saying no, and I think some of that it will be Kane saying no. Obviously, I think there's a bunch of teams that maybe while they called, they were never in it in the first place because it just wasn't for them. So I would say the amount of teams that legitimately had interest and he would have interest in them is less than 10.
Okay. I do wonder about this idea now of, you know, I've always wondered about this, teams getting a player to keep him away from another team. And the one that I keep circling back to are Tampa and Florida. And now that they're neck and neck and it looks like they could be headed for playoff showdown again, and, you know, Tampa's hit a stride, and we all know about the Florida Panthers. Do you see this, just as an aside from Kane here, do you see this being a trade race now between these two teams? If one team is interested, then by extension, the other team is interested. The idea that, you know, that which is explicitly two is implicitly one in this situation?
Yeah, I think there's something to that. But, you know, if it's true that Tampa is out, and the one thing I'll always remember about Tampa is a couple years ago they tried to convince us all that it didn't make sense to trade your first rounder at the deadline. Then they went out and they traded two. So, you know, I'm always like, I get that. You know, sometimes we get played. I know. I don't like it. I know it happens. But so when Tampa comes out and says, yeah, I don't think we have enough room at the deadline to make a deal, I'm not believing it until I see it. You know, I do think this. Somebody told me that they had heard that Florida wasn't convinced they could make it work, and then when rumors started that Tampa was in it, which they were at least for a point, Florida was kind of like, we got to get back in this. And now I think Tampa's, assuming they are actually out, I still think Florida's around it. So, you know, maybe that's not the total reason that the Panthers are in and around it, but I just thought it was interesting when I heard they were out and then all of a sudden they were back in. But I think they were more out because they were wondering if they could fit it cap-wise or anything like that.
Before we get to Bobby Clark here, do you have a thought on the Ken Holland press conference? There's a couple of things that I think jumped out at a lot of people, and one I already mentioned was, you know, the idea of giving people second chances. You know, with respect to the event. What's that?
It's more than that in this case.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, that's the one that stood out. We believe in second chances. And the other one, and you've reported this, and we've talked about it too, the first-round draft pick not in play, comma, at this point.
Yeah.
You have a thought on that one?
I really think with Holland, you know, first of all, I wasn't surprised by anything he said. It was kind of what I expected. You know, I know some people didn't like it. You know, I think what it showed to us is the real challenge facing the Oilers right now. I think we all agree that missing the playoffs is not an option. But a desperation trade or short-term thinking is really stupid. It's really dumb. So I think he's sitting there and he's looking at this and saying, I don't want to make a bad trade. I don't want to do something that might help us now but could really hurt us later. I'm not convinced firing the coach is a good idea, and I do think he legitimately believes that, but I know that we need help. And he's sitting there and saying, okay, maybe we weren't as good as 16-5, but we're not as bad as 2-9-2. At least you hope you're not, and you shouldn't be if you're the Oilers. So I think what's happening here is he's sitting there and saying, boy, we need the players and everybody to hitch up their pants and get going, because I'm not seeing a short-term fix that makes any sense. But I know if we miss the playoffs, we're all in trouble. They're kind of in no man's land right now. They, you know, so what does that allow you to do? I think that's one of the reasons they're really interested in Kane. It's because aside from what I don't think will be a big contract, it's a free player. And they need it. And that's what I take from all this. It's that they're sitting there saying they don't want to do anything stupid, but they know they need help. And that's a very tough place to be.
Okay. Pause on the Edmonton conversation with Evander Kane and the Ken Holland press conference. Bobby Clark on the Cam and Strick podcast yesterday, taking full-throated run at Ron Hextall. Now, There's a story out there that goes back to the 2006 NHL draft. That was in Vancouver. That's the Eric Johnson draft. Jordan Staal goes to Pittsburgh. Jonathan Toews goes to Chicago. So that was the infamous one where Bob Clark went up on stage and forgot Claude Giroux's name. And we've all seen the clip, and it gets replayed time and time again. So the backstory on this one, as I'm told, Elliot, is, you know, a little while before the draft, Ron Hextall, who was working with Philadelphia, went to Los Angeles with Dean Lombardi. This is before the draft. So he's been in on all the meetings, seen all the lists, etc. And the draft comes, and the Los Angeles Kings are drafting 17th, and the Flyers are drafting 22nd. The Los Angeles Kings select Trevor Lewis from Des Moines of the USHL. And that is the player that we believe Bobby Clark wanted at that time. So he's livid. So he thinks that, you know, Ron Hextall has gone there, been in all the meetings, gone with his list, and taken his guy. You know, salt on the open wound. You know, the next player they wanted was a kid by the name of Bobby Sanguinetti, who played Owen Sound, was a defenseman, and the Rangers took him one before Philadelphia. So now Bob Clark is extra livid as he gets on stage, and he can't get, you know, Ron Hextall taking Trevor Lewis away from him out of his mind. And so he forgets Claude Giroux's name and kind of says, hey, Homer, who are we taking? And ends up being Claude Giroux. So I had heard about friction.
Worked out pretty well.
Listen, it worked out great for the Philadelphia Flyers. Like, that's a great situation. No disrespect to Trevor Lewis or Bobby Sanguinetti. But so I know that there's something that goes back at least to 2006 with Bobby Clark and Ron Hextall. But did this one catch you off guard? And do you think there's a potential motivation for what Bobby Clark did?
Yes, I think there's the number one reason. So to me, you know, Bob Clark, who's, you know, people ask me over the years, who are the best interviews you've ever had? And Bob Clark is always on that list. Because if you put a microphone or a notepad or a recorder in front of him and you ask him a question, you better be ready for the answer. Because he's going to tell you the truth whether you like it or not, right? Mm-hmm. Or he's going to tell you his truth, whether you like it or not. So, you know, the thing so I wasn't surprised about what he said, but what really made me think was the timing. You know, Bob Clark, you know, if you look at the draft video from last year with the Flyers, he's there, and Paul Holmgren's there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're still involved, but he doesn't talk. So my whole question was, why now? And I kind of asked around, I kind of thought about it, and this is what I think this is about. I think the owners of the team, Comcast, are really frustrated and angry about how this season's going. And Dave Scott, who is the chairman of Comcast, or I mean, I don't know, whatever his position is, he's in the seat of power when it comes to the Flyers. And look, they did, the plan last year was, we're going to go for it, make some big moves, but we want to contend. And it's not working. And the shocker about it is that the goalies have generally been very good. And yeah. I remember people in Vancouver, they're going to say, well, that first game he was terrible. Yeah, but after that he was really good. And they've still not been good. So they're kind of, so Comcast, I think, is really mad. They're deciding what they're going to do. And I am 100% convinced, if you know anything about Bobby Clark, if you are his friend or you're on his side, he will go to the end of the earth and back to protect you and fight for you. And this was him going to the wall for Chuck Fletcher. What this says to me is that Comcast is thinking about, do we have to change maybe even the GM? And Bob Clark is saying, I think that's wrong, and here's why I think it's wrong. And to me, that was all about, if we're going to tear down, rebuild, or we're going to go in a different direction, you cannot hold Chuck Fletcher responsible for what's happened here. And he has to be the guy. Now, Jeff, I did hear from a couple of people yesterday and last night after I wrote who defended Hextall. They said, yes, there were communication problems there. And yes, they felt that he did not involve the staff as much as he could. But they also said there were moves he made that were very good. Like, for example, Clark talked about the Shen deal. I believe one of those picks turned into Joel Farabee. And so they said, you've got to take the good with the bad. And this is all about Bob Clark protecting Chuck Fletcher. That's all this is about.
Yeah, the Shen deal, just so we're all on the same page, that was for Yuri Laterra and two firsts. One turned into Joel Farabee, and the other was Morgan Frost. So it's not as if, you know, I don't know. Like, Braden Shen's in a different spot at that point in his career with the Flyers.
Yep.
And, you know, one of those pieces for the St. Louis Blues that helped them win the Stanley Cup, etc. I mean, the one thing, like, I get your point that this is Bob Clark trying to say, hold on a second, you can't hold Chuck Fletcher accountable for this team. This team is still more Hextall than Fletcher, and I think that's why he went at him over the over Cale McCarr, saying that the scouts wanted Cale McCarr.
Wasn't even McCarr.
Well, I saw that in your notes that it was Miro Heiskanen, but even still, there's a wonderful defenseman. But I mean, like, man, the revisionist history around this one, 2017 was about two players at the top. Like, that was about Nolan Patrick and Nico Hischier, and they were neck and neck, you know, from about Christmas on, who was going to be number one. And we tend to forget, even though his NHL career has been riddled with injuries, which have accounted for him, you know, not being able to perform. Like, Nolan Patrick playing with the Brandon Wheat Kings, and yes, it's been pointed out that both him and Hextall played with the Wheat Kings. Nolan Patrick was a force, was a juggernaut, you know, playoff MVP in the Western Hockey League. He was looking like, you know, the Western Hockey League always has the knock, maybe this will change with Connor Bedard, that they've never been able to produce, you know, at least like in the last 20, 25 years, the superstar player. I know people are going to scream Joe Sakic at me right now, but like, they haven't produced, I know, the Connor McDavid and the Eric Lindros and the Mario Lemieux and the Wayne Gretzky, etc. Like, Nolan Patrick in the Western Hockey League was coming out and everyone's saying, this guy's going to be a superstar in the NHL. And the other thing about it that, you know, as we revisit this draft, The Philadelphia Flyers only got that spot because of the lottery all season long. They're thinking they're picking 12th.
Yeah,
so this idea
that was one of the weirdest lotteries ever because
And Dallas too.
New Jersey, Philly, and Dallas going 1, 2, 3. Where that was one of the lotteries that got the rules changed. Really,
correct.
Some of the
correct.
Were so pissed off. But that was it was funny. I didn't have enough time really to look into it yesterday, but you make a really good point about the revisionist history. First of all, there's always gaslighting in revisionist history. That happens all the time. You know, the other thing, too, though, I was talking about that with someone. Like, that was a weird draft in the sense that even though publicly, Hischier and Patrick were 1-2 in a lot of eyes and on some teams, there were other teams that had very different boards. Like, we're on in Vancouver. You know, one of the fun stories in Vancouver is watching everybody try to take credit for who had Pettersson so high.
Elias Pettersson,
right?
Yes.
And that's always been a battle about all the different factions arguing, oh, no, we were responsible for Pettersson, right? And it was their scouting department, for sure. But there were teams who told me that they had Pettersson ranked higher, they had Makar ranked higher, they had Heiskanen ranked higher. Like, publicly, yes, I do remember the debate being a lot about Hischier, Patrick 1-2. But one thing I've heard about that draft is some teams did have very different scouting boards. Now, you know, I can't say for sure what Philadelphia's was, but I do know this. I remember Hextall after he got fired. Well, the first game they played, I think, was in Buffalo, and they won. And there was video of the players gleefully eating pizza. And Hextall had, someone said to me that there's a story behind that, that Hextall had banned pizza after games, and that upset the players. And, I asked somebody about that, and they told me that the reason Hextall did it was because they'd hired a nutritionist, and that person, I don't know, he or she, told them eating pizza after games was bad for inflammation. So he banned it. He said, look, guys, our nutritionists that we've hired are telling us this is not good. And when I heard that story, I said to myself, this is crazy. Like, this tells you how badly that this relationship had deteriorated. If he was saying, I'm told it's not good to have pizza, and the first game after they win, and the players are going in front of the camera and downing slices of pizza gleefully, like, that just shows you how, and it's sad, because, like, when I think of Flyers, I think of Hextall. I mean, I probably think of Clark first. But Hextall, to me, like, the fighting goalie, that's a Flyer. Like, that's what a Philadelphia Flyer was at that time. And I just think it's really sad that that's where the relationship has devolved to.
That's funny, because as an aside, I've explained this theory to you before. When I think Philadelphia Flyer, I think Bernie Parent. And my conspiracy theory has always been that Bob Clark was envious, jealous, call it whatever you want, that Bernie Parent was the star in 74-75, and that's why the Flyers never either drafted, developed, or traded for elite-level netminders, because Bobby Clark wanted to prove that you could win a Stanley Cup without one, that all you needed were centers. And if you look at the Philadelphia Flyers draft history, specifically under Bobby Clark, there are no elite-level defensemen that were ever drafted. That's the one area, and netminders, where it was almost deliberate for each, where it seemed like they were just drafting forwards. And they would buy defensemen, they would trade for defensemen, certainly, but they would never draft or develop them. That at the draft, this was always, we're taking forwards. We'll buy everything else, but we're taking forwards. So my conspiracy theory was always, this was Bob Clark trying to prove that he deserved those Conn Smythe trophies and not Bernie Parent. That's how petty I am, Elliot.
You know, I think your theories are crazy. Put it this way. I hope you get them on, and I hope it's face-to-face, and I hope you ask that question, and I hope it's wrong, just so I can see the reaction.
Oh, it would be wonderful.
Jeff, I've seen weirder things. I can't deny it. I've seen weirder stuff than that.
Real quick, a couple. Hang on. Actually, Do you have a thought then maybe on like what's next for Philadelphia? Because trade deadline is approaching, and listen, we're all, you know, elephant in the room here. Claude Giroux is who everyone is looking at right now. Will he, won't he? He's in charge.
I like, we've talked about this. I think there will be a discussion if there hasn't been already. It's my personal opinion that he is traded, and they ask him where he wants to go. And look, the guy's earned his right to call a shot. He's earned his right to chase the cup if he wants to.
Sure.
He's been a great Flyer. He's done everything that they could have ever asked him to do, and he cares a lot. But there's a bunch of teams doing their scouting meetings right now, Jeff, and I think Philly's one. And you know, we've talked about this. They're going to ask really hard questions about where they're going and what they're going to do. And I think Philly's going to be really interesting to watch.
A couple things quick before I wrap up. Do you have a thought on Nick Lidstrom, VP of Hockey Operations for the Detroit Red Wings, by way of Sweden?
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting that he's staying in Sweden. You know, Jeff, maybe you can tell me, but I don't remember anybody with that high a title being overseas.
No, I don't.
And you know what? I guess this is where we're going, and it's hockey's tip to remote working, I guess, is what it is. But look, like, I think if you have that brain in your organization, you do what you can to make it work. You know, I got to say this. Like, one of the guys I was thinking about yesterday was Pat Verbeek. And, I don't know what this means. Probably nothing. I mean, Yzerman values Verbeek's opinion. But, you know, Yzerman's not going to tell anyone anything. He's very quiet. He likes it that way. I've wondered, you know, you take a look at Vancouver and Jim Rutherford saying he wants to hire a first-time GM. I have wondered if there's any chance Verbeek's been interviewed for that. Because the one thing about Yzerman is he likes to push Verbeek. He believes, he has said before, he believes Verbeek deserves an opportunity. And he's kind of put his name out there before. Got no proof of it, but I have wondered at times if he's ever been in the mix there.
I wonder if he's ever pushed him for the Hall of Fame. 522 goals, almost 1,500 games, 1,063 points, almost 3,000 penalty minutes, and a Stanley Cup. Because those sound like Hall of Fame
great
numbers.
Great player.
He really was. He's great one of the ones player. That Anthony Stewart and I always get together on. I was like, how is this guy not in the Hall of Fame? When you just look at the raw numbers, you say, those are Hall of Fame numbers. Like, all the barriers to entry there have all been shattered, whether it's the 500 goals, the 1,000 points, the, you know, almost 1,500 games for Pat Verbeek.